I wonder if you could help me real quick with a little project. I've got a good friend. A lot of cool things have happened this year, a lot of hard things. There's kind of an ongoing story of the trial and the tragedy and the joy and the victory and all that's going on, and it doesn't stop. It keeps going. But one really cool thing is there's a young man that's come to live in Loveland, and he's staying with us, and I really wanted him to come. He's made some real significant life change in the last 18 months or so, and I just really wanted him to be here, and he didn't feel like that was God's plan, so he went and visited his family in Texas. But I wanted to create my own little Faith Walkers promo video just to let him know what he missed, okay? So I'm not very technical, so if we could bring the house lights up just a little bit, and this is what I would like you all to do, if you would indulge me here for just a moment, and then I'll tweet it and we'll be done. We'll move it right on. Okay, so there you go. Okay, so if you could all just stand and wave, and I'm going to scan it, and then I'll just, when I go like this, just everybody yell, "Hi, Brad," okay? All right, so you want me to go over that again? All right, so everybody wave, please. I'm just going to scan. Please scan. All right. Excellent. Thank you. I realize that's not nearly as high quality as you're used to, but he'll get a kick out of it. So we'll just be going over about three sub-points to each of the 72 essentials. It really is much too complex to boil down to lists, but they're helpful. It's helpful to put some sideboards, and we're going to try to do that again a little bit tonight. One of my spiritual heroes is Hudson Taylor. And I don't know if you're Kindle readers, but just a little plug. I love what Kindle does a lot of times. Right now they have his book. I think it's a condensed version of it for 99 cents. Spiritual Secrets by Hudson Taylor. If you're not biography readers, if you want to grow into spiritual maturity, I would just say that's just something that's a pretty painless way to stir up your faith. Just to read biographies, read about other people who have invested their life in following Jesus. And Hudson Taylor was a pioneer in Chinese missions. Late 1800s, his life was given from a very early age. He knew that's what he was going to do. And most of the missions that were flowing into Asia were on the port cities. And somehow through this process, God gave Hudson Taylor this idea, this vision to put a team together and go into the inland, into the innermost regions. And he had just this incredible burden for all the people who had never had a chance to hear the name of Jesus. And it burdened him, and he worked at it. And so he made this happen, and he put a team together, and so many amazing stories. What a process he went through to come to maturity where God could actually use him to accomplish the beginnings of a great work that many of you on your campuses right now are really seeing some amazing fruit from. The beginning of the gospel going to that whole people. But one of his associates, it's just a little quote I picked out of the book. It just encouraged my soul. That had gone, and they were in this mission outpost somewhere, and it was a completely by faith venture. There was no real ongoing support. They were completely cut off. There was no communication for vast amounts of time. And they had come to this point, and right in the middle of this, there were wars going on. There were tribal factions. It was just violence everywhere, and it was just a horrible situation. And these men and women of God said, "We've got to take Jesus Christ to these people." And that takes a certain amount of vision, but it takes a tremendous amount of mature faith. The ability to see things as God sees them, to walk in a way of life that allows us to make choices when it doesn't make sense. Our flesh and the wisdom of this world would say, "You're a complete idiot." And so this one gentleman, I couldn't find the quote again as I was looking it back up. But he had one faithful convert who was also served as his cook. And the cook cooked up the last of their food. And their habit was to just go out and share the gospel day after day and hold meetings at night. And just this process over and over again, day after day, trying to sow the gospel seed. And the cook, and it was just violence everywhere. And their quarters were horrid. And the cook said, "Well, that's the end of it. That's it. We have no more." And he looked at his friend, this man of mission, man of vision, and said, "What are we going to do?" These are words to live by. He looked at him and said, "What are we going to do? We're going to trust in the Lord and do good." And he ate his breakfast and he went out and shared the gospel. There is a process to following God that we have to keep reorienting, but we have to build it into our souls, build it into our DNA, that when adversity hits us, when the challenges that Tom talked about this morning hit us, we don't freak out. Because we have established patterns and habits. And it's not, there's so many images that are helpful and they're all inadequate. And the list of essential habits could go on and on and on. And it's not two wings. It's everything about you must be submitted to Christ, because you don't exist anymore. And spiritual maturity begins with knowing you're dead and that your life is hidden in Christ. And every moment of every day, the trials will end, yes, and there'll be another one. And I'm a little freaked out right now, because some of the trials I've gone through in the last year, I've told people, I don't want to know what the next trial is. I don't want to know. I don't even want to imagine how hard the next trial is going to be that's going to increase my faith. But I know the one who's going to bring it. There's an old hymn, "Trust and Obey." I don't know if it's up there yet. I'd be happy in Jesus. Trust and Obey. That hymn, I don't know if you ever read the stories behind the hymns. They encourage me to know what was going through their head. What were they thinking about? What was their life experience in that? A guy named John Samus. He was a businessman. He came to Jesus. He left the business, became a minister. And he was a hymn writer. And he didn't actually have this experience. It was just passed on to him. But a good friend of his was at this evangelistic crusade. And they had these after meetings. And this one young guy stands up to give his testimony in this after meeting. It could be any one of you that maybe got saved in the last months or the last few weeks. And you're just beginning to get your hands around what it means to be a Jesus follower. And you don't have a lot of information. And you may not have real sound theology. And the one wing of the plane is just not even growing yet. But this young man started to share his testimony, and eyebrows were getting raised, and people were beginning to be concerned about some of the maybe just immaturity and foolishness, and maybe he swore or something. I don't know. I don't know what he did. But they were all just kind of getting a little restless in the meeting, and this one guy that knew the author of this hymn was sitting in that meeting, and the young man concluded. He says, "You know what? I guess I don't understand much, but I'm gonna keep on trusting, and I'm gonna keep on obeying." And everybody in the room just goes, "That kind of sums it up, doesn't it? That's kind of the name of the game, isn't it?" And those words can be loaded, and we have to unpack them. We have to look at them, and it's more than what we think of as trust, because it's this all-encompassing immersing ourselves in the person and the beauty and the exaltation and the authority of God. And it's also more than just obeying. And I want to define those things, but the verse that Hudson Taylor's associate, the passage, is Psalm 37, and it's a good one. It's a song we used to sing when I first came to Jesus. And the context of this psalm is the God is speaking to the people of God, to his people through the psalmist. And he's kind of explaining to him, look, I know it looks like all the people who are doing evil are winning. I know it looks like I'm being quiet. I know it looks like they're getting away with it. I get that. And he speaks these words to try to calm them down. And in the middle of it, in verse 3, begins this, "Trust in the Lord and do good. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness." The ESV says, befriend. Make faithfulness your friend. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he will do it. There's a lot of words in there. There's a lot of ideas in there that flow into this big ball of walking with God and having the outcomes squirt out good, obedience, doing His will, building His kingdom, bringing love. And they're necessary words. Trust, do, dwell, cultivate or befriend, get active to be faithful. Delight yourself. There's a choice to be made in what you delight in. That's an interesting phrase. Delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, in the Old Testament way, that might be a little confusing way of thinking, where if you did the right things, you got physical prosperity. That was part of God's plan to demonstrate He was with the nation of Israel. Do these things and I'll make us prosperous. In the New Testament model, those things they're no longer promised. And so there's this kind of strange reality here that if as you discipline yourself to trust in the Lord and you begin to delight yourself in that which He is, because He is good, you will in fact get what you desire. And in our context, that's Him. That's Him. We are so quick to lose track of what is good. Commit your way, and He will do it. Trust also in Him, and He will do it. Just a few definitions here. Happy. I don't know when this hymn writer wrote this, exactly all the connotations of happy. But I know what the connotations of happy are in Western Evangelical Church in America. And it has to do with good circumstances and finding Mr. Right and having above average children who are good at music, sports, and education. And they're good at everything. And you're debt free. And so many things will say, I'm happy. I'm happy. I have enough to eat and I don't get fat. And I get to be generous and it doesn't cost me anything. And we have this very, very warped view. If you stopped and unpacked your definition of happy, it is completely untenable. That's not the happy we want to talk about tonight. The happy we want to talk about is intimacy of God, a full experience of God, a joy, a peace, a fruitfulness, a meaningful life that makes sense, that it fits together. It's not disjointed. And anytime we try to find the one thing, whether it be exalting Jesus or just do more or a certain theological system or a philosophy or praying the prayer of Jabez or whatever it is, the one thing will always lead you to imbalance. It is a bigger deal. And we have to understand it is losing ourselves moment by moment, choice after choice. Obedience is not something you do and you're done with. It is a state of being. It is a state of yieldedness. It is a state of understanding that God is with you and He wants to work through you. And you have an opportunity not just to do the right thing, but to demonstrate love to this world. When you hear the word obey, just obey. It can be a heavy downer word. I especially appreciated Brent's impersonation of a tree grinding out fruit this morning. That was good. I think mine's a little better. I won't show you, but but there's this idea of somehow this stress and veins popping, and somehow it's gonna really, really, really hurt all the time, and it never gets any better, and there's no power available, and it's just not right. It's not. There's a place that we can get to, that it's not just grinding it out more. And what obedience is not, and you probably struggle with one or more of these things to some degree. It is not a way for you to impress God, to earn something. It is not your self-righteousness. You are not measured by your obedience. There's a different reason for your obedience, and it has a lot to do with the good that flows into you and out and from you into the world. It is not to impress God. And it is not some broken form of legalism, the keeping of the law, because it's the right thing to do. I'm going to be real honest with you. I see the need of humanity. I've had an incredible privilege to be in a lot of different places in the world for short seasons, just little parachute drops in to see life and how it flows in faith and I see the struggles in our own little church in Loveland, Colorado. And I know the stories that are being written in here, the struggles you have, and how many right choices, how many acts of obedience, how many times you're going to have to trust God and then obey. And I get absolutely overwhelmed. One of my greatest challenges is to stay encouraged that somehow we're going to make progress. We're going to get there. I know we'll get there when we see Jesus. I'd like to make a little progress before that. I get overwhelmed with all the brokenness and the task, and I've come to the point that I must find, teach, expand this understanding that there is more than try harder, do more, act better. There's some way to walk where our trust is increased and the flow of our life will yield fruit. There is an outcome that God is looking for in his faith, and there's a lot of work talk going on about the fiscal cliff and the economy and all that's going on there. Well, there's this spiritual economy, and the currency of that spiritual economy is faith, and that's what God is trying to build into us. And faith is trusting, and faith is doing. Trusting and obeying, they both require faith. And if you're going to build either one of those, you have to commit yourself to building your faith and understanding as you bring that strength, as you bring that trust, as you bring that exaltation of Jesus in your life, in your worship, in your smile, in the way you do your job, in the way you do everything in your life, that you're fully submitted to him, that you are contributing to the spiritual economy. And there's a tremendous cost when you ignore building your faith, because spiritual maturity is not a set of behaviors that you attain to or habits that you attain to. Because you could do all of those things on the outside and it may not change your faith. Not all of them. Obviously, there's very spiritual things. But we're not trying to build a group of Pharisees that are really good at looking like they're really good. It is a process of growing faith. And your obedience builds your faith. And we're going to look at a few examples of that. But I want you to understand something. There's a self-delusion, especially for young people, that your life doesn't, what you do, the little choices you make in the middle of the night on your computer don't matter. All the little choices that Mark has talked about and preached on and have been so helpful for my own life since I was a young believer. And other men have built into me these patterns and practices that they've demonstrated, they've taught, they've been examples of. But the goal is to produce an outcome that says, I believe this, I trust this, I enjoy this. If you don't own the consequences of disobedience, and I just want to give you just a little snapshot. Not you, I'm not talking about you, but if you choose to live a lukewarm, undisciplined, not committed to growing your faith life, you're going to become part of that great problem in the church called lukewarmness. And it's devastating. It's devastating to your soul, but it's also devastating to the economy of the kingdom. And just a few very practical things that happen, okay? When we aren't serious about obedience, you know, John writes that there is no greater joy than to see his children walking in the truth. Everybody heard that verse or read that verse at some point? I have no greater joy than to see my children walking in the truth. And he's speaking as a pastor, as a father in the faith. Guess what the most painful thing your pastor walks through in relationship to ministry? It's when his children are. When they get up day after day and week after week and say, this is what will be good for you. And people say, no, thank you. There's a discouragement that flows into, there's a challenge that flows into serving God when people around you don't want to participate in it. It's like you're carrying a whole team, and it can feel like that. And you can do it on a small group too, but it's not just pastors. When you don't participate in obedience, it leads to a heavy discouragement on the flock. You would not believe the stats on how many pastors leave the ministry. And some of it's just sin, foolishness. I get that. There's lots of reasons. But I don't want to be a reason. I don't want somebody to go, you know, I tried to help you obey so many times and you just said no so many times that I had to go sell insurance. I'm sorry. Not that there's anything wrong with selling insurance. The issue of giving. See, I don't know if there's anything that's more related to trusting and obeying than how we treat our money. How well we obey God in that. I'm personally of the opinion all of the resources to reach the world, to buy Bibles in every language, to put people in every people group on the planet, to buy radio time, to buy supplies, to buy medicine, is all sitting in the American church's pockets right now to finish the job of the Great Commission. And I could prove that. Now, I'm not saying on the tithe. I'm talking on the wealth. You know how many missionaries won't go into the field because they have to go raise their own support because the whole funding of it is just broken? That's disobedience to what God says your money is for. Now, you may be doing great on that, but collectively, the church's disobedience is asking those who are serving in the field to go make their own bullets at the same time. There's a cost. There's a huge cost. I don't know if you know this. This came out of the book Radical. I have not verified it. I trust him to speak the truth. There are 26,000 children will die today from either starvation or preventable diseases around the planet. And tomorrow, guess how many will die? 26,000 children from a lack of food and a lack of easily preventable disease or through easily preventable diseases. And the next day, another 26,000. That bothers me. If it is in fact possible for us to do more by becoming more obedient, more yielded, more trusting with our resources, not building our own little kingdoms, but committed to Christ's kingdom. People don't hear because we don't obey, so they can't believe. Our whole culture. Oh, it's getting so dark. Guess what drives away the dark? There is no such thing as dark. There's only absence of light. Okay? When the light goes away, the dark comes in. The light gets brighter, the dark goes away. Obedience leads to big, bright lights in the middle of darkness, no matter where you live. And you can drive away darkness through your light, through your obedience. And there's a cost to our culture. For many of us, it leads to our own discouragement. It leads to just foolishness. Proverbs just filled with examples of what it looks like to be a sluggard and what it looks like to be a fool. And it comes down to obedience, right thinking, and then making choices that are wise. Obedience. Committing to the ways of the Lord. Cultivating faithfulness. Delighting in what He says is right and good. One of my favorite quotes of all time. Because life is hard. And some of the things that are hard are God-ordained trials. And there's nothing you're going to do to stop the flow of those trials. Because they are good and they're for your benefit. There's also another hand of God involved with your life, and it's called discipline. And He allows us to walk in our folly and our foolishness, and sometimes He spanks us, and sometimes He lets the world spank us, or life circumstances spank us, because we're just being foolish. And life is really hard. It is really hard. It's hard to suffer. It's hard to trust. It is hard to make those choices day after day. But it's a whole lot harder when you're stupid. And God has given us a way to push away a lot of stupid actions. To just trust Him and obey Him. Don't choose stupid. Disobedience affects everything. It is never a little thing, and it never affects just you. Here's the summary statement for this. What I'd like to try to communicate. There has never been, nor will there ever be, a happy, disobedient Christian. There has never been a contented, disobedient Christian. There has never been a fruitful, disobedient Christian. And there has never been a joyful, disobedient Christian. The fruit does not match. Whether you're trying to produce the fruit or not, if you are sowing to disobedience, you will not reap spiritual fruit. And those are spiritual fruits. And you may grind, grit your teeth and try to smile through the pain. But if that pain is God ordained and it's for a purpose to bring perseverance and faith, then you can have joy. If it's just from being dumb, there is no joy. To be happy in Jesus, trust and obey. Reasons to trust Him, and we're just going to go through these again. There's this process that if you don't remember, should we believe? Should we exalt? Should we worship? Should we do this great? There is no tension. You have to do it all. And you have to do it all the time. But there are a few habits that if we will give ourselves to them, a few motivations, if we'll keep them in front of us somehow, the process can make more sense. It's not quite so foreign to our minds and our flesh when we're wrestling with these things. And there are good reasons to trust Him. Trust Him because He proved His love. The whole conference last year was blessed. Just thing after thing after thing after thing. Why you were blessed. The awesome love of God and its predecessor that Mark promoted, has promoted for years and years and years. It's a constant resource. Give people, please, please, wash yourself in this. You did not spare His own Son, but gave Him up for us all. Will He not also with Him graciously give us all things? That is so comforting. That is so good to help us know that we can trust. We see the love of God. He's proved it. In this context, He's also established Himself as a father. And Paul writes to the Thessalonians, and he describes his role as a father. And it's a good picture. Jesus did as well, but I like this passage. And we get this idea of what it looks like to be a father. God relates to us as His father. And most of us don't think much about that. Or if we do, we think of more like a grandfather, cuddly, fuzzy, give you sugar and candy and don't, I won't tell your parents, kind of grandpa. Instead of who God really is, and for you know how like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into His own kingdom and glory. Part of God's role is to move you forward. And while we glory in this unconditional, awesome acceptance, the beauty of the Lord and what Jesus has accomplished for us, the love of the Father and giving His only begotten Son, it is amazing what God has done. It blows my mind. But if that's where I stop and don't understand that God would like to move me to maturity because He really would like me to be expressing and reflecting His glory to this world, and it is appropriate at some point that I actually get potty trained and not just say, I just love the love of my dad and I'm 35 living in his basement wearing diapers and that's the way it is. And we can have this view of God that He has no expectation, He has no intention for us to actually be a part of this process. And does He need us? No. No. In the system He's established, He does need us. He set it up somehow to use us, to use our obedience, to speak to people, to display His glory in our relationships and in our life choices, to display our trust of Him. He set it up that way. And at some point, we got to grow up. It's appropriate. Oh, I'm not going to try anything. That would just offend God. Trust me, it won't offend God if you actually take out the garbage or something for Him, okay? He'll like that. You're owning this. This is going to be yours someday. The keys to the kingdom are coming to you. Get ready. Grow up. Don't be immature in your thinking. We also have to trust Him because He said to. Now this may be in your understanding, and I don't know what you read, I don't know what you listen to, but God is really big, and He really is all powerful, and He really expects people to do what He says. And I'm sorry if you're uncomfortable, if that sounds harsh, But he is God, and he's not a little bigger than you, and he's not a little greater than you. You are ants in his sight. And we all authority has been granted to Jesus. All authority. You don't get to make the choice. Yeah, I'm not really into God's authority. Remember what we said about being stupid? It's a bad decision. Do you not fear God? I'm amazed at what I see people doing. I'm a relatively alpha male tough guy. I am scared to death. Or I used to be. I'm old now. I am scared to death of getting outside the will of God. I don't want to find out what that looks like. Now, I do it plenty of times in the short term, just stupid decisions day to day. But I do not want a pattern of my life to demonstrate that I don't think God has the authority to tell me what to do. Which God exactly are you looking at? Francis Chan has a great little video, if you can Google it. It's about Simon Says, and this idea that if I could stand up here right now, and we'd all play Simon Says, and you would all play along, and you would all do exactly what I said, and I could make you do things like bark like a dog or jump up and down, and you would all, because you want to win the game, right? Well, some of you wouldn't because you're just way too cool. I get that. But most of you would just go, goody, a game. I'm going to win. And you would do exactly what I said. Well, unless it was dangerous or something. And yet, somehow when it comes to the commands of God or the authority of God, we think, well, that's just completely unreasonable. It's completely unreasonable. God has given us commands about behavior and what it's going to take. And he's explained the truth. And he says, through Jesus now in the kingdom age, all authority has been granted to him. And he is directing his people. And he is the head of the church. And he is moving according to his will and his plan to take the kingdom all the way around the globe. And his body is off playing Parcheesi somewhere. We don't have that authority. God is big enough and strong enough. Third thing, reason we could trust him is because, or with it, we reason we should trust him is because it pleases him. It really makes him smile. It really, really makes him smile. Trust is virtually synonymous with faith. Faith is God's love language. Obedience is God's love language. It's the thing that demonstrates we get it. In Acts 13:22, there's a lot of interest, especially among young people. Music's a big part of it. Worship experiences and getting excited. And it's all really fun, and I enjoy it, and I love to watch that enthusiasm. But at the end of the day, David was not a man after God's own heart because he danced naked in worship. That's not what made him a man after God's own heart, okay? As cool as that might have been, it is not what made him a man after God's own heart. It's this, Acts 13:22. He's speaking of Saul, the he here. And when he removed him, Saul, he raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all of my will. He will do what I say. Oh, I love Jesus. Not if you don't do what he says. To grow in trusting, just a few things. There's this cycle of faith. John 14:23. If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and he will come to me and make our home with him. And whoever does not love me does not keep my words, and the word that you hear is not mine, but the Father who sent me. Okay? Read it fast. Look it up. It's really, really important. I want Jesus. Does anybody not want God? There might be some seekers here. I don't want to presume. But if you're here, I'm assuming you want God. And I want to exalt Jesus. And I'm going to glory in grace. Great, wonderful, noble intentions to grow in grace, to grow in understanding of God, not just knowing about God, not knowing God's works, which is all we really want anyway, is happy circumstances. Fix it for me, God. When he moves in and takes charge, we don't like it. Grace is increased when the person of God is increased as we grow in faith, and that comes when we obey. It comes when we obey. Trusting and obeying cannot be separated. Knowing and obeying cannot be separated. If you will not obey him, then you do not trust him. If you don't trust him, you don't love him. If you don't love him, maybe you need to hear more about him or experience more of him. But there's a broken place in the process somewhere. You will obey when you trust. And it is your responsibility to keep gaining that trust, gaining that knowledge, gaining that understanding of him by drawing close, pressing in, seeking him, making those choices. And there's this cycle of faith. When we God asks us to do something, we do it, we get more of him, we grow. And it's actually, I don't know what direction it goes, but it's not a circle, it's a spiral, and you keep getting stronger. And if you want to bench press 300 pounds, you don't start bench pressing 300 pounds, you start bench pressing whatever you can bench press. And you do it several times, and you get stronger from week to week to week to week. And it's very important, and that's the cycle of faith. God doesn't grant you faith. He grows your faith through your obedience, through your discipline. All obedience is not rooted in trust, okay? It can be self-righteousness. It can be out of fear. It can be trying to make a deal with God. There's different reasons we can do the right thing. But trusting him will always lead to obedience. It will always lead to obedience. Here's some practicals of trusting obedience, of producing this. Here's some things you just got to think about. This is my free. What you need to know and do in order to know and do what you should know and do, okay? There's some small decisions you have to make. They're not easy decisions, but they're not go out and move to China and live in a hut. It's not that kind of decision. There's little choices that you have to make. There's heart choices. And you need to understand something. I spend the vast majority of my ministry time, my life, working with, trying to encourage people about what's true in God and how to have a relationship and experience his comfort and how to comfort one another and live in community and to really honor the Lord and to be refreshed in what's true. Vast majority of what I say. But no matter how much time you spend doing that or thinking about it or glorying in that, there is a moment where you have to make a choice to choose what you will do. There's a moment of denying the flesh. There's a moment of the will. There's a moment of commitment, and it happens multiple times every day where you really want to do good. I get that. You really want to be generous. You really want to sow to the Spirit. And yet, you get to that moment, and you go, it's just too stinking hard. And you got to find a way through that. That doesn't ever go away. It doesn't ever go away. You will have to decide where your affections are, what you value, what you really want, what you hope for. There's a key moment of obedience, and it's rooted in trust. It's rooted in those affections. It's rooted in the delight of God. But we have to put to death the flesh and all of its whining and say, enough with you. I know this hurts. I know this hurts, but we're going to do it anyway. A big part of that decision is you have to own the law of cause and effect. A number of pastors over the years have talked about this a lot, but it is so critical to your life success. And everybody gets it, but they don't get it. Okay, I need to lose weight. Eat different and exercise. No, I don't want to do that. Well then, maybe there's a flabberator or something that'll take it off for me. I don't know. I'm going to find another way. You got to own the law of cause and effect. You got to let it sink in and go, you can't keep doing this and expect that outcome. You just can't. Galatians 6, 7 through 9, and this isn't talking in a general sense. It's talking about giving and sowing, but it applies. It applies. It's a universal principle. It's a law of nature. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever one sows, that will he also reap. It's a really simple concept. And we are so delusional about it. I mean, if you go, I'm going to plant a garden. And you go to the this is how we live. This is how foolish we would be, and no one would do this. I'm going to plant a garden. And you go get a bag of seeds. Let's just say radish seeds. And they're little, and you smell like radishes. And I don't know if you've ever gardened. And you go to your garden, and you put down a row of seed. And you go, now I'm going to plant peas. And you take the same seed, and you put it in there. And then, now I'm going to plant a couple tomatoes. And you start those in the house. But just I don't want anybody telling me I don't know how to garden. Okay, I get this. But let's just say you live in an environment where you didn't, and you plant them in little pockets, and you go, okay, now I planted my garden, and now I'm going to have this amazing bounty, and in August and September we're going to have all this wonderful produce, and this is just going to be amazing. And you go out there and you watch, and wow, they kind of all look the same. Well, what happened? I specifically wanted a different outcome there. Well, you don't get a different outcome planting the same seed. You get radishes. And you can't change it. God is not stupid. Don't be stupid. If you don't want radishes, don't plant radishes. If you want to sow, if you want a spiritual effect, you have to sow to the Spirit. You've got to make that choice. And your flesh won't want to. Everybody understands it at one level. There's certain people in the culture that understand it better. People who are disciplined in music or athletes get it. You work really hard for a goal. And they don't look around, oh, gee, we should have won the Super Bowl, but we didn't ever actually practice. Athletes don't think that way. Business people can get it. They go, I'm going to make this investment. I'm going to have an outcome. I'm going to work really hard. And somehow the people of God don't have the sense to know, if I don't make spiritual choices, if I don't discipline my flesh to yield to the Spirit, if I don't make that decision, I will still bear good fruit. And we're shocked. Radishes again? You have to know the truth about the flesh. It's not going away. It is not going away. We also have this secret desire that somehow, hopefully, maybe, please God, it'll get easier. It doesn't get easier. It can be trained, but it's always there. It's always there to yip in your ear. It's always there to whine. It always wants you to stay where it's warm and comfortable. It's always there, nagging you. Why do we have to do that? Why do we do that? Can't we just stay where it's warm? Feed me, feed me. It's gotten to the point, you know, where, I mean, it's a crisis. We have to change the channel if the remote battery goes dead, because our flesh just will not get up to actually change the channel. The flesh is a big crybaby, and it is your enemy. It will rob you. Have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. There is a process, and it never goes away. It's never completely gone, but it can be trained. Things like fasting, things like just making your body uncomfortable occasionally help in that process. Not eating the same, every food that you want, whenever you want. There's a value when you say no to it, and you go, see, you didn't die, big baby. You can do this. You can do this. It seeks immediate comfort. Your flesh seeks immediate comfort without regarding real value. This is a long process of training ourselves. And I had a hip replacement almost 3 years ago. And I remember going to the first couple physical therapies. And it was so bad. It was so much pain. And I felt like such a wuss. I mean, there's actually multiple sets of gluteus muscles. One of them is you're familiar with, gluteus maximus. There's also gluteus medius, which is kind of a massive, important muscle that runs right through here. It runs all the way up here. It's kind of a big muscle. It's not quite as maximum as the maximus, but it's big. It's a big muscle. It's important. So if you don't have that muscle, guess what happens? You fall over. And you don't think about it because it's just doing its job. Well, mine didn't want to do its job. In fact, they hacked the whole thing in half, and it had to reconnect and connect all these little, I don't know what, I am not a doctor, I don't know. Something had to heal in there to make it all better. And for months after I had that surgery, I would stand up and people would go, what a dweeb, what are you doing? Because I would stand there and I'd go, And I had, because my brain was not yet talking to my muscle. I had to will it to talk to it. I had to force it. And so I had to move my leg, and then it would start firing. And then I could walk. Because if I just stood up on my leg, it would go boink, right on my head. Because my leg would still be back there. See, time out, we're still on vacation. And I had to fire it. And as I was sitting there in physical therapy, and you would not believe the wussy little exercises they had me doing. I'm going, and I'm just looking at my legs going, and I'm sweating and I'm grunting and I went, oh, this is so painful. And that's kind of what our flesh feels like. And now I'm relatively okay. And what I began to understand was there's this process that God has put us through, and He gives us this picture, this spiritual picture with our children when they're born. And I began to watch little babies after that. Because, you know, they just look like they're just frustrated. You know, they're squirming around. I mean, they're just not, what are you doing? You know what they're doing? They're building muscle. They're doing physical therapy. And they do it minute after minute, day after day. And before long, they're walking. I had one grandson start walking. I think he was 7 months, 8 months. He was just an animal. I had another grandson, not so much. He didn't get the whole thing. But I'm not sure. Maybe it was a long way to the ground. He wasn't interested. He seemed to be strong enough. But he improvised. And he would do this. He'd kick his legs this way, kick his legs this way, and he would scoot right across the floor. There's nobody in this room that had the muscle memory and skill that little 12-month-old boy had, because he'd worked on it day after day, week after week. I'm going to get across the floor. I'm going to discipline my flesh because I want that food. And it's over there. And he found a way to discipline his flesh. For whatever reason, he didn't want to walk. He walks now. In fact, He's such a cheerful little kid. He's just so much fun. We were out playing in the snow on Christmas Day, and he's just turned two. And 2-year-olds in their little Michelin Man suits, you know. You know, the Christmas Story picture. they're just down there. And we got this little hill in our yard, and we had a shovel, and I was pulling the kids around, and it wasn't a lot of snow, and we don't have a sled, but we were just kind of messing around. I'm from Iowa. We improvised. You make your own fun. And it's not a very big hill. But he got down there, and I took him down there, and I said, oh, you can walk back up, because I just knew he just loves a challenge. If his brother's doing something, man, he just wants to do it. He stands down at the hill, and his mom's in the house going, you gonna help him? And I go, nope. He'll make it. And he just take small steps. And 20 minutes later, I'm not kidding. And the hill was like from here to that guitar. It's like no grade. And he just smiled. I made it. You got to find delight and joy in training your flesh, because it's hard. And if you don't want something more, you'll never endure it. Your flesh grows when you feed it. Your flesh grows when you feed it. Okay? Now, I'm not saying all these things are sin. Please do not hear that. I enjoy a good cup of coffee. I enjoy watching a sporting event every now and again. I have a computer. There's lots of fun things that I enjoy. However, if you spend the majority of your time feeding your flesh, and that is often what we spend most of our time doing, either making ourselves look good, resting, eating, entertaining it, finding ways to make our life comfortable and happy and entertained and lots of stimulus, if that is your pattern in your practice of life, don't be surprised if the voice of your whiny flesh gets louder. Because then you try to stop it if you're spending hours and hours and hours feeding the flesh. It's one of the reasons you just feel like you've been in a coma when you go home for Thanksgiving and you watch TV all day and you go like, oh, because your flesh, it's just toxic to feed it that much. And it can become sinful, but feeding the flesh does not mean you are sinning or every activity is sinful. It means you're coddling it. You're making life easy for it. And it is not the way of discipline. It is not the way of maturity. You have to make choices that say, I want something more. I want something more. I push away the food. I just do away with it. Sleep can be this way. Sports things can be. There's wonderful things to be learned from sports. All kinds of analogy. Paul used them. And yet when it crosses that line into controlling our thoughts, and that's what we dream about and think about and obsess about is our fantasy team and who did what and getting home for Sports Center, there's something that's feeding our flesh there. There's something that's feeding our flesh. How soft is the bed we sleep in, and how warm is the car? And there's just lots of things. And I've been teased because there's different times in my life I just try to make my flesh stop whining. I'll do something that's hard, and sometimes I'll just intentionally let myself get very cold just to know that my flesh doesn't have control over me. I enjoy going out for a bike ride on the coldest day of the year. Just to say, flesh, see, you big baby, you can do this. And I don't like being cold. Trust me, if there's anything I would want to feed my flesh in, it's staying really, really warm. God bless Omaha. But we have to understand feeding the flesh is not necessarily sinful, but it can lead to it. Okay, hard choices you will have to make. Last couple points. Hard choices you'll have to make, and there are no shortcuts. This is what you need to understand about your flesh. Hebrews 2:10, for it was fitting that he, Jesus, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons and daughters to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. The founder of our faith was perfected through suffering. You are not going to find a happy place in the faith where you don't suffer. Your flesh is going to suffer. And it will take discipline. So here's the three action steps. Number one, you got to make a plan. You walk out of this conference and go, I want to grow. I want to be a spiritual giant. If you don't make a plan, you're not going to grow. You got to have an action step. I got the big idea. No, you don't. Own it. No, you don't. Write it down. Speak it. Commit to it. Commit your ways. Commit your ways. Tell somebody, tell yourself, put it somewhere where you have a plan. Second thing, turn it off. You got to do this. It's the choice before the choice. Turn it off. What's it? Everything. All the voices, all the media, all the toys, all the pressures that flow at us from this life, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere. There's somebody in this room now that is actually probably surfing the web. They got to check their Facebook status. I don't know. I get it. But at some point, you just have to go, shut up! I've got to listen to the voice of God. I have got to create some quiet. I've got to create some space. The third thing you have to do is go to bed. Just go to bed. Oh, I just have such a hard time getting up in the morning to have a quiet time. Not if you go to bed. You know, I just can't get up before 7 and I got to be at work at 7:30. Go to bed at 8. Do you want it or don't you want it? Radishes await you, okay? I'll have a quiet time later in the day. Go to bed. it just breaks my heart. So many young men, so passionate, and they tend to get pretty wound up when I speak on certain subjects, and it's so fun to hear their enthusiasm, and man, I just want to give my life to Jesus, and I see him the next day, I go, how'd it go last night? It was great, man. We stayed up till 4 a.m. watching YouTube videos, and I go, don't be deceived. You got to have a plan. You got to turn it off, all of it. And you got to go to bed. Those are the choices before the choice. Oh, is this such a crisis? I'm just being so opposed. Well, if you don't go to bed, you don't get up, you don't get encouraged, you don't grow in trust, you don't hear the voice of God, you don't get filled with the Spirit, and then you have a hard choice to make, and guess what? You're naked and poor and weak. Oh, it's just too crushing. Not if you went to bed. As the Western Church, the resources and tools and education and opportunity that we have, it's almost criminal what we have to give to the kingdom. And the church, I'm not saying any of you, and I pray there's no one in this room that lives this way, but we all struggle with these things. But there's such a casual attitude, such an apathetic attitude, nobody would say this, but secretly in our head, we all want to get to the point where we don't actually need faith. We want circumstances, enough money, and enough strength, and enough character that we don't actually need Jesus anymore at all. Now, that's heresy. That's how we live. We build little lives that don't require any faith or pain or discomfort or suffering. And we say, see, and we're surprised when our faith grows small and we grow little girly man muscles that have no spiritual strength. And the devil pushes us and we go, oh. Stop it. Stop it. Somehow in this grace upon grace that has been given to us from John chapter 1, and the answer is in Romans 6, Paul forms this rhetorical question. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin that grace may abound? And the American church goes, yeah, seems reasonable. Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a plan. Let's work it. Let's not forget. God forbid! It's not trust, that's not obedience. It will not lead to maturity, and God is worth more of it. Somehow, if our seeking of God is not seeking His approval, but it is to renew our hearts and minds in this reality that will transform our self-thoughts and our very identity to conform to this truth that He's revealing. It was created at the very beginning. There's something about faith expressing itself in love, trusting and obeying. If faith equals trust, trust equals faith, those are fairly close synonyms. Would obedience and love be close? Is that fair? I mean, didn't he say the sum of the whole law is love? So faith expressing itself in love, trust expressing itself in obedience. It seems like a pretty good pattern, a pretty good plan. There's something about that it's a significant part of the gospel message. It affirms the gospel message. It demonstrates, do you get it? Do you get what God has done? Do you get who God is? Do you get what He's about? Do you get His value system? Have you immersed yourself in Him? Do you understand you've been crucified with Christ and you don't even live any longer? And if you try to live, you're going to build little silly huts out of wood, hay, and straw. And at the last moment, it's going to go, poof, and it's going to be all gone. And your life won't matter. And you go, what happened? Faith expressing itself in love requires choices. Delight yourself in the Lord. Delight yourself in the Lord. Hey, can we, as I close here, could we stand and just sing just the chorus to that song? Trust and obey. You guys all know it? You ever heard it? Somebody want to hum it? Here's how we're going to do this. Okay? It's going to require just a little bit of... Mark's not coming back up, so we don't have anywhere to go. Okay, so... I just forgot the words. Somebody help me. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Okay, this is how we're going to sing it. Okay, I need my notes because I'm going to teach you some different lyrics. Not very much. It's very uncomplicated. Well, it's not that uncomplicated. Your flesh will love it. Okay. So that section over there, we're going to have a little choir, okay? How many we got? All right. Those two sections. Hold up your hand. Everybody, there. That whole section, we're going to hold to be, and you're going to say happy, happy, content, joyful, fruitful. And then you hold it. Okay? Got it? So... Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy. But to trust and obey. Thank you.
Teach me memory.